Good morning. Good morning, everyone. Happy Saturday. I'm supposed to announce that Geshe-la is not feeling well this morning. Tsukuyola is attending her nephew's graduation, and Kanola is not here. She's out of state. So Jill is involved with the auction for Sarah's belongings, so guess what? So today I'm going to tell you something that goes through the meditation process, something that I've made up 5 minutes ago. Okay, so first, I thought we should just sort of get into our meditation position. If you don't know how to meditate, you know, you try the most important thing, if you can't, you know, do anything else, is to keep the back straight, because apparently that helps the flow of the energy in our channels. And so if you can sit on a cushion, you can have your legs crossed if you can. If you're sitting in a chair, just have your feet flat on the floor. And if your feet don't reach or aren't comfortable, you can put a cushion underneath your feet. Your arms are sort of akimbo, away from your torso, again, to have sort of air circulating through there. Your hands can be right on left with thumbs touching, or you can have your hands on your knees if you like, whichever is most comfortable. Let's see. Your shoulders are level. Your head is tilted slightly forward. Your jaw is relaxed. You can put your tongue on the top of your palate behind your front teeth. And your eyes are sort of, if you can, have them slightly unfocused in front of you. Slightly open, which it's very difficult when you're first starting. Many people have their eyes closed, but it helps people from laxity, from the it's an sort of an antidote for laxity, for sleepiness, and also it helps when you start calm abiding meditation practice. It helps you to visualize the object better if you have your eyes slightly open, unfocused in front. And then another part of the position can be your breath. The eighth point is just following your breath. So that's the general 7-point or 8-point Vajrayana position. So what I like to do is start with a refuge field visualization. So just imagine in front of you Shakyamuni Buddha, and you can actually see his statue in front of us on the altar, golden in color. He has an oar behind him that looks like it's just an arm's length from his body, but it's actually endless. It's a bodhisattva who tried to find the end of the perimeter of his aura, and he was able to travel for quite a few world systems, and he could not find the edge of that aura. So his right hand is in the mudra of he's touching the ground, subduing the earth. And that symbolizes that Shakyamuni Buddha has subjugated the four Maras, the Lord of Death, the Son of the Gods, Tainted Aggregates, and the Afflictions. And his left hand It's in meditative equipoise, holding on alms bowl full of nectar or amrita. And the nectar is medicine, immortality, and transcendental and exhaustible wisdom. So he's sitting there with the 32 major and 80 minor signs in the form of light. And light radiates from his heart at the front, back, left, and right. On his right, or left, are the lineage lamas of the method view or extensive conduct, such as Maitreya and Asanga and Shantideva. In the center of Shakyamuni Buddha, you can visualize your root guru in the aspect of Shakyamuni Buddha, and in front of him are the lamas from whom you have taken teachings directly. On his left or right are the lineage lamas of profound view, Manjushri, Nagarjuna, and behind are the Svajradhara and the lineage lamas of blessed practice, such as Lama Atisha, Tilopa, Naropa. So that's the five sets of the refuge field. And Shakyamuni Buddha is sitting on a lion throne. And the lion throne represents the inner qualities of enlightened beings. The eight close bodhisattvas of Shakyamuni Buddha all possess the same inner enlightened qualities, but each one possesses has one designated specialization or field. It's like Maitreya's love, Manjushri is wisdom, Vajrapani is power, Chenrezig is compassion, Stigarbha is richness and fertility of the land. Samantabhadra is special expertise in making offerings and prayers of aspiration. Akashagarbha is purifying obstructions. And Suvani Varana Vishkambin is purifying obstructions and wrongdoing. And Shakyamuni Buddha is sitting on a lotus, sun, and moon disc. The lotus, the lotus and the two discs represent the three principal aspects of the path: renunciation, bodhicitta, and the wisdom realizing emptiness. So the lotus grows in the mud, but is unhindered by it, representing the mind of renunciation, the method for liberation from samsara. Likewise, the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas emerge from the muck of samsaric life. They began like us. They were just like us. But they found a teacher and they practiced for many lifetimes until they attained pure and perfect freedom from samsara. The moon disc represents bodhicitta. The moon is by nature cool, and like that, bodhicitta is by nature that which solely benefits sentient beings. And the sun disc represents the wisdom realizing emptiness. The sun clears away the darkness, and likewise, the wisdom realizing emptiness eliminates ignorance and inner obstacles. The sun matures the crops for harvest, just as the wisdom realizing emptiness ripens the raw mind. So Buddha Shakyamuni, sitting on the lion throne, the lotus, the moon, and the sun disk, symbolizes that he possesses all these qualities, the enlightened qualities and the three principal aspects of the path. So, we're not here alone. Just visualize that to your right is your father of this life, whether he is alive or if he has passed. But he represents all the male sentient beings. And to your left is your mother of this life, representing all the female sentient beings. In front are all your enemies, Bardo beings, unfortunate spiritual beings. And behind are your loved ones, your circle of friends, and so forth. And all of them are experiencing great complications and sufferings. And they don't want to experience these sufferings anymore. So you lead them in the refuge prayer as if you're leading them from bondage and samsara. So I'll just say this because it's a little different from the one that we really usually say. And I'll say each of the lines three times. The first time, visualize that three jewel, that one of the three jewels is purifying all anything that you have, faults that you have in connection with that jewel. Whether it's the Guru, the Buddha, the Dharma, the Sangha. And by the last repetition, feel that you have received all their blessings. So now we're going to just visualize that you are leading all these beings. And they can be animals too, but they're all, just visualize all of the beings in the form of humans, sentient beings, humans, for now. I and all reincarnating beings, equal to the vast of space, from now until we reach the essence of enlightenment, go for refuge to glorious and immaculate gurus. Go for refuge to the glorious and immaculate gurus. Go for refuge to the glorious and immaculate gurus. Go for refuge to the perfect Bhagavan Buddhas. Go for refuge to the perfect Bhagavan Buddhas. Go for refuge to the perfect Bhagavan Buddhas. Go for refuge to the immaculate Dharma. Go for refuge to the immaculate Dharma. Go for refuge to the immaculate Dharma. Go for refuge to the Arya Sangha. Go for refuge to the Arya Sangha. Go for refuge to the Arya Sangha. So a stream of rainbow-like nectar flows through you, purifying all the faults that you have in relation to this to the Guru, the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha, and you receive all their blessings. And now we can say the act of the refuge and bodhicitta prayer. And let's see what we usually say. And that's on page 98 in the Gold Book. Want to say that? If you know it from heart, you don't have to go to page 98. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha in order to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I'm enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By the merits I create through listening to the Dharma, may I become a Buddha in order to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened to the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Supreme Assembly. By thy merits I curate through listening to the Dharma. May I become a Buddha in order to benefit all sentient beings. And so that was the refuge and bodhicitta prayer. And instantly, a replica of Shakyamuni Buddha enters your crown, and instantly you become a Buddha. And then less than a nanosecond after that, countless replicas of Buddhas emanate from your body, your mind. At the crown of every being, and three times in the 10 directions, throughout all the world systems. And instantly, you establish everyone in enlightenment. And the entire universe, the entire cosmos, is completely enlightened. And then you can rejoice that you've been able to be a part of this, that you were able to establish everyone in a deep, pure, and complete essence of enlightenment. Now we'll dissolve the refuge field, the five sets of refuge, and the line throne dissolve into Shakyamuni Buddha's heart as if he were the sky. And then Shakyamuni Buddha enters into your crown, into your heart, where he remains always. And so the refuge and bodhicitta practice is completed. Okay, I don't know if you want to just sort of relax now. And so Geshe-la has asked us just to do some single-pointed meditation practice. So, it's kind of hard to do that, immediately. So I thought we could start with single-pointed meditation on our breath first, because that's that's what people usually start with, because it's always there, and, it's something that you can bring into your daily life. So, and during the practice, if you want to shift, like from the cushion to a chair or chair from the cushion, just please do that. And if you feel uncomfortable, you can put cushions under your knees, you know, put an extra big round cushion under you, just make yourself really comfortable. Because the purpose of the practice is not to make you uncomfortable and sit, you know, in a cramped position. Because when you have like a pain in your knee or your back, then that becomes a hindrance to your practice. So you want to, you know, be comfortable as much as you can. So we're going to try to take, you know, some breaks in between. So when I first started meditating, my mind scattered, you know, all the time. So when I was practicing under the Thich Nhat Hanh tradition, what he would do is he would sound the bell or invite the bell, as he says, very frequently during the meditation. So he would just hit it once. And then usually by then my mind had already scattered several times, and then it would bring me back. It would sort of remind me to bring, you know, go back into my breath or to my meditation object. And then it would be invited twice for the end of the meditation practice. So I thought we could do that. Now for the counting breaths, you start with an exhalation. You breathe in and count one. Exhale, breathe in, count two. And then we could try to do that until 21. And if you lose count, then you just start back on number one. And then you just keep going like that. So, since this is just counting breath, I'll just hit it once at the beginning and once at the end, because you'll be, you know, the reminder will be your counting. Okay. So get into your special meditation posture, and especially keeping your back straight. Okay. Any problems or any questions or anything so far? Okay. All right. So, in a second, let's do it again. In the meantime, try to think about what kind of meditation object you want to use in single-pointed meditation. It can be anything you like. Probably something not too complicated, you know, such as something too complicated might be a house where you live in, you know, or, you know, your where you grew up in, maybe, with the yard and everything. That's just too much. You know, just try to zero in on one object. For example, you know, if you really love that vacation spot you went to, you know, just try to get one thing that maybe symbolizes that vacation. And I don't know what that could be, you know, whatever you think would be good. Or something that makes you feel really peaceful, you know, like a flower or a candle, or in our tradition we use a holy image. And so like the image of Shakyamuni Buddha, or a deity, a Tara, for example. And so just try to think of what you want to choose to focus on. Okay, so let's try the counting breaths again 21 times. So is everyone okay? Not fidgety, needing to get up or anything. Having it okay. Okay. So now let's try a single point in meditation on whatever meditation objects you choose. And you can use your breath if you like. You know, anything, and just try to focus, try to concentrate. And the reason we try to concentrate on the object is to have a calm and peaceful mind. Usually what happens at the beginning is as soon as you focus on your breath or focus on the object, you immediately feel calm because you stop all this, you know, the stuff that's going on in your mind, and you think that that's the goal, you know, but it really isn't. It's not calm abiding. It's just feeling peace, and it's actually a hindrance. It could be a hindrance later on, but immediately, you know, when you drop everything and you're just in the present moment, you don't worry about anything that comes up, you know, your agendas, problems you're having at home or at work or any other problems you have. You just focus on being in this moment, in the present, on your object, which could be your breath or some other kind of object. And it really does give you incredible peace. You know, it really does. It helped me anyway. In my situation, it helped me a lot. And there's nothing wrong with, you know, enjoying that, but there's more steps than that. Okay, so let's do the single-pointed meditation. And so this time, like if you're focusing on, say, a flower or a sunset or an object, then you don't go by your breath. Pay attention to your breath and that object at the same time. You know, otherwise there's two objects. So just try to make your breath as natural as possible, and even if you're you're meditating using the breath as your meditation object, you still try to, as much as possible, breathe normally. And I don't know if this is going to be annoying, but every minute I'm going to sound the bell once. And then after 5 minutes, I'm going to sound it twice, and then you'll know it's ending. Okay, all right. And just try to, if you're at the beginning, it's really easy for your mind to scatter. So that's what I'm going to do. Okay. Okay, so get into your meditation posture again, comfortable, but, you know, actually being in the present. Don't try to go into la-la land, you know, try to know that you're here, be absolutely aware of your surroundings, that you're here, that there are other people here, that you're in the Gompa, and you're meditating here on the object. Okay. Okay, how was that? Was the bell annoying? No, it helped. It helped me. I think I had to have that bell. I had a tape, and that kept, I just played that. It was very, very helpful for me. Let's see. Do you want to try another one? How do you feel? Do you want to take a break, or do you think you can manage another one?
Sure.
Okay. All right. Do you want to do it without the bell, or do you want to do it with the bell? What? With the bell? Okay. All right. Okay, so now I thought we could take a few minutes just to share and just make a, you know, maybe two or three circles and just talk about your experiences, anything that would benefit other people in their meditation practice if you've been doing it for a while or if you have questions and so forth. And then I'll sound the bell to end the sharing. And I'll ask people if they want to share anything, you know, to the entire group, any good points. So if you just break up into groups. Okay, so would anyone like to share, you know, something, some benefits or some tips, meditation tips, or things that were good for you, things that did not work for you? Any volunteers? Yes. Oh, do we need, yeah, wait for the...
I really like the sound of the bell. And then I'm hoping maybe you can, in some other time, you know, do this sound on the cell that I heard in Nepal. It's beautiful. Like they use the big cell to make another
that
sound.
Horn. Oh,
yeah, like a horn, but it's a cell. Really.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
And horns too. Right, right.
Yeah. Any other? Oh, yes. There's some.
Oh, I just had a question on calm abiding. What's on a time frame? How long does it usually take to be able to picture the object and hold it for say 10, 20 minutes? Is it, you know, 6 months, a year, 2, 3 years? I know practice makes perfect. The more you do it, what's like a realistic time frame that one should look for?
I think that depends on the person, but I think that's a second level, isn't it? I think the first one is mindfulness, you know, of your body, and the second level is if you can hold it for about 10 minutes. You know, there's 9 stages, so there's first mental placement. For example, you know, you might think of someone who is a, I'll just give you, you know, real exaggerated samples. Okay, let's say someone who grew up in a monastery, is surrounded by yogis who, you know, have meditated for years, you know, and then he goes and practices under a teacher, and he's in a great environmental, you know, surroundings, you know, very conducive to meditation practice. It's quiet, you know, you have all the resources there and everything. He'd be able to do it, you know, very soon, in a few days, maybe a few weeks, you know, depending on your mind. But then let's say we have someone who just came back from Afghanistan or Iraq, and he's, you know, traumatized, and he may not be able to do it for years. So it's up to, you know, it's up to the person. You know, you try to do the familiarity. In fact, I think that I know that Thich Nhat Hanh had some retreats for people who've been traumatized during the war, and they were able to take great advances in mindfulness, awareness, you know, and meditation on the breath, mindfulness on the breath. So in his retreats. So right now, maybe his Sangha are doing it because he had a very strong, very powerful stroke. But I know that's I've seen those retreats on the web. So you know, it depends, and I don't think that, you know, you should compare yourself to anyone, you know. And even if you don't finish, if you're moving toward that goal, then you're planting the seeds, imprints, to do this so that you'll be able to complete it, you know, one day. You know, maybe in this lifetime or another lifetime. And it depends on how often you can do it. You know, you start with short, frequent sessions. And if you just don't have time to do it during the week, or you don't do it, you don't want to do it, or choose not to do it, that's a huge delay. You have to do it regularly. You know, regularly. Make it you know, a practice, a daily practice. So, and then it's good, for example, it's good to do it in the, when you first get up, even though many people are not morning people, if you just wake up a few minutes earlier, and because you're rested, and nothing has really started going on yet in your life, in your day yet. You don't, no one has, you know, talked to you, or no crisis has come up yet, usually. And so they say just a few minutes in the beginning of the day is a good way to start. But you do it every day. You make a commitment, you know, to doing this single-pointed meditation. And then they say, you know, within like, what, 3 years or so, you could be flying. Yeah, there's a Tonka out in the lobby that has it. So it's mental pacing, continuous placement, patch placement, close placement, taming, pacification, complete pacification, one-pointed placement, and balanced placement. So, and I don't know, it has, you know, I've seen teachings where they have indicators of where you are. Like, if you can do this within, if you can hold your meditation object for 1 hour continuously, then you're at this stage or this level and so forth.
Okay.
Yes, sir. There's a, would you wait for the mic? There's mic behind.
Hi. I just started doing this, and like this morning, I do it in the morning, like you said, because that's my best part of the day. And like this morning, and actually now I pick my bike because that gives me great pleasure and I know it well. But what I'm doing is, like, I'll focus on the handlebars and I can see it. And then what happens is there's like a something inside me says, okay, go to the, another part of the bike. Should I not be doing that, or should I just stay on the handlebars? Is that one object?
Yes, you should stay on the handlebars.
Okay, so actually, it's so like that the bike could be like more than one object, is what you're saying.
Oh, I see. You're saying that.
So like
okay.
Like I go to the handlebars, and then I'm like, okay, I notice that. I'll go to the tire, and then when I come back to the handlebars, I notice something different. Is that the right way to do it? Or, you know, it's still the bike, but I'm just thinking, like, my mind's jumping around on the bike.
Mm-hmm.
It's still the bike.
Yeah, it's not good to jump around.
Okay.
You know, the point is to try to keep it focused so that eventually you'll see the whole bike. Not just the handlebars or the wheels, you can see the whole bike at once. It's like seeing, you know, for example, if you're trying to focus on a single holy image, then maybe at first all you can see is maybe the hand mudras. And you're doing this mentally. You're not... you look at the object and you try to remember it, then you put it aside and you try to have a visualization of it. You know, so usually it's not something that we have. So if you're in the bike, you know, you look away and then you think, oh, of the handlebars. And I guess you can't, I don't know if you can see the wheels or not. But so you're not actually looking at the object. You have the image and try to remember it, and then you put it to one side and try to recall it as if you're looking at it. And then eventually you'll be able to see it clearly. If you're sitting on your bicycle and you're looking ahead, and, you know, you had looked at your handlebar, then you look up at the wall or space before you and you try to think of the handlebar. And you're trying to think of the whole bicycle. But then maybe you can only recall what the handlebar looks like. Then that's fine. You just focus on the handlebar. But if you can focus on the whole bicycle, because that's your goal, then you think of the whole bicycle. It seems like you might, I don't know if you could focus on the whole thing at once. But, you know, you don't look at the item you're looking at. You try to create a mental visualization of it. So wherever you go, whenever you want to, eventually, no matter where you are, you think bicycle, you can think of the entire bicycle immediately. You could see it. So, yes, someone behind you.
Just one question. How to slow down stream of thoughts which comes to our mind, my mind, during, especially at the beginning of meditation? What to do to slow them down, to be able to concentrate on whatever we want to concentrate?
I think eventually it will slow down by itself. You don't pay attention to it, you notice it. You say, oh, that's anger. And then go back to your breath. For example, if your object is your breath, then you think maybe a million things, oh, there goes all my projects. And then you just label it and bring it back. And you keep doing it over and over and over again. And that might happen for every session, no matter how many sessions you do it at the beginning. You know, it may start racing at the beginning, but eventually it may calm down in the middle of the session. You know, because you're first settling down and you're starting the practice, and especially if you're not in the beginning of the day, say it's at the end of the day, you know, and or maybe if you were doing it at work, things are starting to happen. You have things to do, you have problems that you have to solve, then your mind will be racing. So that's the purpose of having meditation object, the breath, or whatever you are, the lotus flower, whatever, and then it'll slow down, because it'll start concentrating on the object, which should be positive, something peaceful, you know, that you can focus on. And then you just keep practicing. And then it'll slow down eventually in that session. And then when you do another session, it might go really fast again. But you can slow it down. And it depends on what kind of situation you're in. If you're in a crisis, if your house just burned down, you lost your job, you know, all your savings are gone, whatever, it's really hard. It's really hard to do that. But I've been in that situation, and I, you know, you can do it instantly. It can stop, and then maybe after your session, it might come back again. But it will go into the other spaces of thought during the rest of the day when you get used to it. It calmed me down. It completely changed my attitude. If Louise, yeah.
Well, I remember when I first started. Who said that? I was terrible. I would sit down on the pillow, and as soon as I'd sit, it seemed like 50 things would enter my mind, like you said, because you're trying to be quiet and calm. The more I was trying, and the harder I tried, the worse the more thoughts just came, and I just thought, oh my God, I'm never going to be able to do this. But then after a while, I'd just say, okay, and just bring it. I was using my breath, so I would just bring it back to my breath, and then I'd notice after maybe 5 breaths, I'd be off in planning something else, and then I'd just say, okay, I'm done with that. So, and the more I did that, like Wamala said, the easier it got, but it took... It took me months to be able to sit for 5 minutes. I just thought I'd share that.
They also had mentioned one time about the non-round meditation that
uh-huh.
would kind of help at the beginning to kind of get rid of some, I won't say get rid of, but settle the mind.
Yeah, did you hear that? You can try the 9-round meditation that Gisela teaches. And that helps also. Yes, ma'am.
I would like to share with my experience about the stress reduction that me and my husband took that class with Bud, and I cannot remember his last name.
Ryder Lavery.
Yes, about 7 years ago. And he used Buddhism, but not as Buddhism. The meditation is the same. And he would bring in poetry. And one of the poets that he was quoting was Rumi from 14th century. And I remember specifically about calming the thoughts and that stream, which is the very first experience of all of us. He said that, quoting Rumi, you invite each thought to a room with empty chairs. So you don't fight them, in other words. In each thought, you sit as a guest. Nothing with anger or, you know, being upset about these thoughts coming, but to give them spaces on the chair. And that was very helpful at that time. Very helpful. And still is for me. And I spend a lot of time in my country, in Poland. So when I came in January, I was doing every day meditation for 5 minutes. And I can really confess what you're saying is so true, all of you who are taking part in the voicing day experiences, that after about 5 minutes, I actually was in a state of happiness. I could smile without trying. Recently, last couple of weeks, because I'm leaving for Poland, I stopped doing the practice, and it's crazy. So that's why I'm here.
Oh, yeah. Thank you. Thank you. That's a wonderful tip to have invite the thought onto the chair. Okay. So I thought we could dedicate with Master Shantideva on page 246 in the Gold Book. May all beings everywhere, plagued by sufferings of body and mind, obtain a notion of happiness and joy by virtue of my merits. May no living creature suffer, commit evil, or ever fall ill. May no one be afraid or belittled with a mind weighed down by depression. May the blind see forms and the deaf hear sounds. May those whose bodies are worn with toil be restored on finding repose. May the naked find clothing, the hungry find food. May the thirsty find water and delicious drinks. May the poor find wealth, those weak with sorrow find joy. May the forlorn find hope, constant happiness, and prosperity. May there be timely rains and bountiful harvests. May all medicines be effective and wholesome prayers bear fruit. May all who are sick and ill quickly be free from their ailments. Whatever diseases there are in the world, may they never occur again. May the frightened cease to be afraid, and those bound be freed. May the powerless find power, and may people think of benefiting each other. For as long as space remains, for as long as sentient beings remain, until then may I too remain to dispel the miseries of the world. Thank you. Thank you very much.